You're listening to Birthing at Home, a podcast. I'm Elsie, your host. I recorded this episode on unceded Wurundjeri land in Naarm, Melbourne, Australia, where Aboriginal peoples had been birthing at home, on country, for thousands of years prior to the British invasion. They are the original storytellers. If you want to learn more about me, the podcast, or how I can support you in achieving your home birth, be sure to check out my Instagram at birthingathome_a podcast. This is another midwife story in the Midwife Supporting Home Birth series, and today I chat with Anika, a private midwife in the Newcastle region who is such an inspiration for students and midwives out there who want to support home birthing families and work in a model that truly offers continuity of care. Anika also chose to have a home birth with her son, and we chat about the power of birth and the importance of women being supported to trust themselves. An amazing episode that you should absolutely share with any student or currently practicing midwives. Enjoy! Before the episode has even begun, let me clear up some confusion about Anika and Aneka. They're the same person, guys, just different pronunciations of Anika's name. So just roll with it and don't let it get in the way of you enjoying this brilliant episode. Welcome, Aneka, to Birthing at Home, a podcast.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. To be completely honest, listeners, this is the third time that we're doing this. And Aneka has actually already been 3 minutes into this incredible introduction. Anika, do you want to start off by telling the listeners a bit about who you are, where you live as well?
Absolutely. So I am a privately practicing midwife and I am based in the Newcastle region. I am a mum of one crazy little fun toddler named Ilya, and he is currently watching me right now. Very confused. So yeah, so I have a crazy little toddler joining me on this interview. And
yeah, so that's right.
Private midwifery is essentially where a midwife has to go and become endorsed, and from that they become insured, and they gain providing and prescribing rights. So essentially, private midwives are able to support women through their preconceptual period into their pregnancy, birth and postpartum, and they can provide anything along those journeys that is necessary. So bloods, ultrasounds, pretty much anything and everything that you might need in that journey.
Yeah. So
it makes it incredibly helpful when you meet someone who's wanting to get pregnant, then you can help them get pregnant, and then you can look after them when they are pregnant. It's an amazing thing to be able to do everything.
Yeah, it is amazing. It means, there's so many benefits to continuity of care, but it's also a lot more enjoyable as the healthcare provider because it's, quite exhausting. You know, as a student, like as you would know, we discussed this a little bit before, but if I had finished my midwifery, I would have graduated in 2017. So you graduate you graduated just after me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. I remember having to get 100 antenatal appointments, 100 postnatal appointments, and you're in and out, you're having to learn people's stories like so quick, and then you've got to get it out of your mind because the next person's coming through. Mm-hmm. There's so many benefits to continuity of care, but I'm so curious, what led you to becoming a midwife? Like what, growing up, like what was your understanding of pregnancy and birth and your path into midwifery?
So my mum is a nurse, and anything and everything medical or anatomy, the body, anything along those lines was really, really open, easily discussed. It was, if you have a question, it was always a safe place to ask. So I remember learning about the reproductive system and just being completely and utterly perplexed at so you take two things and you put them together and they turn into something else. And then it turns into a baby. And then the baby comes out. And I have this like distinct memory of just being so intrigued, so mesmerized by this process that I desperately wanted to do it. I wanted to learn more about it. And that was very fleeting. I was very young. And then in high school, in year 12, I was a bit of a rat bag. And I just remember being like, oh, I think I want to be a midwife. Like I really think I do. And I looked up at the booklet and it was telling you what ATAR you needed to have in order to get into the degree you wanted. And as I previously mentioned, I was a bit of a rat bag. And I looked and I saw that the ATAR was 98. And I immediately was like, there is absolutely no way. There is no way I'm going to be able to achieve that. I'm going to do the next thing that I'm interested in, which is photography.
Yeah.
So I completely didn't follow midwifery at all.
Yeah.
And I went down and I studied photography and became a photographer and worked in portrait photography and then was unhappy with my life, which is so interesting because I wasn't doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I decided that I would leave Australia and I wasn't going to come back until I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And a week into my trip, I walked past this woman in Vietnam who was heavily pregnant and it just like hit me. It was so hard. I was like, oh, I know what I want to do. I want to be a midwife. Damn it.
what am I doing here?
Now it was just that realization is like, no, you know what you want to do. Your self-doubt is the thing that has been preventing you from doing it. And now you just need to get to the place where it doesn't matter how long it takes, you just need to commit to it. And and that's what I did. So I ended up spending my trip going around the world and trying to meet as many birthing people. So I went and saw Ina May speak.
Oh, wow.
It was the most
incredible.
So it was in, not in Ontario, you know, in Vancouver, sorry, in Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
It was almost, it was, the excitement in the room was like going to a rock concert. It was like, everyone was buzzing and I like sat right front row and I like looking up at her and I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And
wow,
so, yeah,
that is so cool.
Oh, it was amazing. So I tried to spend that time to try and figure out what could I possibly do to make my application better. Anyway, lo and behold, we got back to Australia. I got into nursing because I didn't get into midwifery with my ATAR. And I had to spend 12 months working towards – or a semester, not 12 months, a semester towards bridging across.
Yeah.
And so I did that and I got in, which was amazing. And then in my training I had met and we had the privilege of being able to work with a private midwife for some of my antenatal experience, and her name is Bronwyn, and she owns Lismore Birth House, and she's phenomenal.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And from that moment, I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to be a private midwife. But in my head, I was like, that's something way off into the future. Like, that's a distant possibility.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I had my first baby.
Yeah.
And I was working towards trying to get onto the group practice in the area. And when I had come back from maternity leave, much too early, I tried to get back on the pathway to get into group practice, to get back into home birth, because I hadn't been back in home birth since I was training at Byron.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to work full time. And I realized there was no option to work in a group practice unless you worked full time.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. I was like, no.
Yeah.
I want to be a mother as well. Like, I want to do these things. I shouldn't have to choose.
Yeah, don't compromise. Yeah.
Don't compromise. No compromise. And I pretty much had to start a private practice as the only way of being able to work in a group practice. Oh, sorry.
Privately.
privately practicing midwife is to open up my own business.
Yeah.
Because the hospital, let me explain that again. So in order to work in a continuity of care model, the hospital system refused to split caseloads.
Yeah.
So you had to take on a full load. People always ask, why did you go into private midwifery? And I was like, because it was the only option for me. It was it was something that I needed to do and I wanted to do. But the reality of not being able to work in a model that I loved unless I chose to be a parent or not be a parent, essentially, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
My only option was to go private. And I was like, well, fuck it. Here we go. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
Which was really, really challenging and hard because Ilya was – so I opened my business when Ilya was just over a year old. So I started working on the business when he was 9 months old. So I went back to uni when he was 9 months old.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, yeah. Because you've got to do – so the 5,000-hour thing, so you had to achieve that. And then you can, like, do the endorsement.
So it's a really finicky, messy process.
Yeah.
So essentially if you want to become a privately practicing endorsed midwife, what you need to achieve is you need to prove that you have attended 5,000 clinical hours. Now, if you are able to find a midwife in a group practice, in a private practice, in a hospital, you can work anywhere in that field.
Yeah.
As long as you can prove that you've done those 5,000 hours. So there's a private midwife who's just got her endorsement down in Sydney. Oh, I've forgotten her name. She's beautiful. And she was able to attain the majority of her 5,000 clinical hours postgraduate in a home birth setting with private midwives.
Yeah, wow. As being like the second.
As being the second, yeah. So that's so unheard of and incredible. But for most midwives, the only opportunity is to get a job in a hospital, do your 5,000 clinical hours, which is approximately 3 years full time.
Yeah.
Once you have that, you then need to attend a – or in between that time. So whilst you're gaining those 5,000 clinical hours, you then have to get a postgraduate certificate in pharmacology for midwives or a master's degree.
Yeah.
So I was very much smarter, not harder, and went straight for the postgraduate certificate in pharmacology.
Yeah.
And – that was the most content-heavy degree, like certificate.
Yeah.
It was mental, absolutely mental. But I always go, if I could have achieved it with a nine-month-old and the only way I had time to study was when he was sleeping.
Yeah.
Anyone can do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you do your 5,000 clinical hours, you get your prescribing rights, which is through the certificate of pharmacology and diagnostics for midwives. Then once you have all of those things, so the certificate, your clinical hours, you then have to apply for endorsement through APRA.
Yeah.
So the endorsement is a massive process. It is, you have to prove everything.
Yeah.
So all your experiences, you have to prove where you've had experience in, like if you've worked in a hospital, have you just worked in the antenatal clinic or have you worked in the birthing suite and the antenatal clinic? Because depending on where you want to work, so some private midwives will work only in antenatal and postnatal. So they only need to prove that they have experience in those areas. Whereas if you want to be a continuum of care midwife where you're working across the entire spectrum, then you have to prove that you've done that.
Yeah.
So once you have your application for endorsement ready, you send it off and it takes anywhere between 8 to 12 weeks to get back. And that's if everything's correct.
So
it's a massive, massive process. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, wow.
Once you get your endorsement back, so once they say, yep, you have it, you are now an endorsed midwife. The only yeah. thing that changes is that if you type in your name to APRA, it comes up and it says endorsed.
Yes. Yeah. Looking on my APRA, I'm always like, oh, what is that? Like, what's that thing? Yeah. But yeah, if you're an endorsed midwife, that's where it appears. Yeah, of course.
That's the only place. Yeah. And then from there, once you're endorsed, you then need to go and get your prescribing and providing rights through Medicare. So they give you your provider number, they give you your prescriber number, which is essentially the thing that makes everything streamlined as a private midwife. Because I can request all of my clients' first antenatal bloods. I can send them for their ultrasounds if they want ultrasounds. And then it all comes back to me. It's all managed by me.
Yeah.
It's my favorite part is that I can just keep everything all together. I know exactly who's had what, when, where. Yeah. And then once you have those rights through Medicare, then you have to get your insurance. Yeah. And your insurance is very expensive.
Yeah, really? I mean, they've got the monopoly, so that probably makes sense.
It is. So there's
they can charge whatever.
They can, because there's only one insurance agency that will cover private lives. So they can do whatever they want with us and we have to abide.
Yeah. That's mad. Like, going back a bit though, like, when – so you mentioned that you were exposed to home birth in Byron. Is that the first time that you ever – like, had learnt about home birth, or did you know about home birth growing up? Or
When you ask that question, I don't have any memories of being exposed to home birth as a child or anything like that. I think my first home birth experience is as a student midwife, rocking up as the sun is rising to a woman's home with my mentor and watching this woman birth this baby by the fire. Like, it was, it set the scene completely to how I perceived birth, being the first birth I ever witnessed.
Wow. Yeah. And then, I mean, like, when that set the scene, like, why would you want to be part of a birth experience in any other way, really? Like, or at least, you know, not exclude that, because, you know, if you work in the hospital system, you're going to see, like, lots of different versions of birth, but, like, you miss, like, this whole environment. But if you're a private practicing midwife, you can kind of, like, dabble in whatever you want. And... like,
I think, there's an amazing thing to being able to witness home birth and in a really safe and confident place. Like, my mentors were, shout out to Vicky Gersh, she's amazing. I finished my degree being at Byron and I was like, oh, never seen a woman bleed after birth. Oh, never seen a shoulder dystocia. Oh, never seen an emergency C-section. Like, I'd never seen it. It just didn't happen. Like, the women came in, they birthed, they went home, and then we started them on their postnatal journey. So I finished being like, I think I've got to learn. Like, I think I need to be exposed to this. And it was really interesting going to the John in Newcastle as a new grad and meeting other new grads that had never had experience with a Doppler before. So listening to the fetal heart intermittently instead of having the CTG monitor tell them, like, they had no confidence with it, some of them. And that was terrifying to me. I was like, hang on a second. Like, that should be the foundations of our practice is normal. And then we add on complex as we go. I was deeply grateful that my experience was in that way. So I feel really empathetic for a lot of student midwives that I meet, that their first experience turns into an emergency Caesar or a shoulders or something like that, because it sets the scene. It sets the scene of what birth can be, and you really want to trust birth.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you trust that you can – breathe. Imagine if we all like walked around being like, oh my gosh, I might stop breathing at any moment. What a horrible way to live. That makes me anxious just thinking about it, let alone, you know, not being able to birth. Like we should be able to trust birth. Mm-hmm. I've had two home births and I've spoken to so many other women that have had home births and free births and it's such power as well. Like it's, you know, you it's your body, you take control of, you know, bodily autonomy. It's just like a whole different ball game to what is a pretty medicalized maternity system. Mm-hmm. So with you as a home birth midwife, how does it work? Because you're like in your own, you've created your own business. How does it work to get seconds, second midwives?
So to the beauty and the messiness to private midwifery and home birthing is that there's no insurance. There's absolutely no insurance that covers me during a woman laboring. Until the baby's born. Once the baby is born, then our insurance goes, oh, yep, all good, no worries, we'll cover you again. So there's this giant gray area. So there's nothing saying that any midwife can come and support a private midwife. So just a registered midwife can come and be able to support a private midwife in a second capacity. So just like in a hospital where you hit the button on the side of the wall or you call and say, hey, there's a baby coming. Can you come and witness this birth? You legally have to do that in a hospital. You legally have to have a named second at a home birth. And that is incredibly important because this is the thing we were saying before. It's like you want to trust birth, but you also want to trust the woman and you want to trust that you know what normal is and you want to trust that you know what abnormal is and you know what to do in that circumstance. So the seconds are so valuable because they're your extra set of hands because worst case scenario, you need two people to look after the mum and potentially look after the baby. So I've forgotten your question about the seconds. How do
I know. Like, how do you find them? I mean, there's no. I mean, there is a shortage of midwives, but how do you? Are they relationships that you build? Are they friends that are midwives? Are they other home birth midwives?
So it's been really interesting. So in this last year, it has been whoever is available, and then I met the beautiful Talia Tattersall, who is just opened up her private practice, which is very exciting. And her name is Birth with Passion, and she's in the Cessnock region, and she is a hypnobirthing practitioner. She's a midwife. She's incredible. Big plug to her. So she and I, by chance, met, and I had this beautiful woman who I knew was going to birth really quickly, and no one could come. Like, none of my usual seconds could come. And I was like, oh no, I really need a second midwife. And I realized that I had Talia's number, and I was like, oh, hang on a second. Are you free? Like, do you think that you'd want to come to this birth? And she, like, was already in the car. She was like, I'm coming.
Wow.
And ever since that birth, we've worked together. So, it can be anyone. Most midwives will contact me and ask, hey, if ever you need a second midwife, I'm more than happy to be called if you need.
When you were, you know, going this route into private practice and home birth midwifery, like, was that just an accepted thing that you were taking that path, especially with colleagues? Because, like, you know, you graduate with, like, all of your midwifery cohort and not all of them are becoming home birth midwives, you know?
No, yeah. So I had a really, really, really devastating transition, I would say. Like, it was so necessary and it was so it was so necessary, I guess, because I went from having these incredible mentors in home birth and, like, absolute masters of birth physiology
Yeah.
And then stepped into this new environment where these women were masters, these midwives were masters of complex, masters of women who were on death's door, and they could absolutely look after these women and do the most incredible job.
Yeah.
And so the interesting thing about working in a tertiary facility is the fact that the population is different, because you only ever see a large majority of complex and high risk circumstances and stories. So yeah. That becomes your normal. So for a lot of my colleagues, it was absolutely shocking, and how dare I think that I can do this.
Wow.
It was devastating. It was really devastating, because I looked up to these midwives so much. Like, so many of my team leaders, I was like, oh, I respect you so deeply, and I respect what you do. Because as a new grad, I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do in this situation. And they would come in and they'd be like, we're going to do this, 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 and this. We're all good. Like, everything's sorted.
Yeah.
And I had this one midwife who I still adore, but it was very hard. I would call her my midwife mom.
Yeah.
And she is a specialist in complex. And she said to me, she goes, you're not an M3 team midwife. You cannot take on complex women like this. Like, you can't do that. And I was so heartbroken, because I was like, what do you mean? Like, why?
Yeah.
Why on earth? And that specifically was because one of my first ever clients was a twins client. Yeah. And at the tertiary facility that is near me, and for the women in the Hunter region, is to go to the John Hunter Hospital.
Yeah.
So those women would be seen by the doctors. They'd be seen in the M3 team, which is the high risk continuity team.
Yeah.
So because I was doing it differently, there was a lot of, who do you think you are?
Like,
you're not doing it the way that we all do it. Like, what's going on? And it was necessary, because I needed to learn that they were not there for me, I guess. Which was really sad, because I really wanted them to be.
Yeah.
I wanted to have these amazing relationships with these incredible high-risk midwives who, when I needed them, they would be there to support me for my clients.
Yeah.
And I just had to realize that they weren't, and it was going to take a different sort of journey and relationship to be able to have what I wanted.
Yeah.
So I grieved deeply.
Yeah.
It was very, very challenging. Very challenging. It's been interesting now, like, I did have twins. Like, I did have a twins client, and all was well, and everything was managed really well. And things happened, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, you were capable. And it's like, I was. I think it was just one of those circumstances where I just had to believe in myself and really follow the process and follow what I know is the process, which is, you're going to do this, 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 and this at this gestation, and we're going to check this. And then I'm going to add in all of the beauty that I know that comes with being a midwife, and add that into that, whereas she previously would never have had that. It was, I hope that answers it, because it was really tough. It was really sad.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, now the relationship has changed.
Yeah.
So they've been incredibly supportive. So I had a client recently who had very specific needs, and I just went straight to the managers and was like, look, I have this woman, and these are some non-negotiables for her. How can we make this happen?
Yeah.
And they just pretty much turned around and said, yep, no worries. We're going to make this happen for you. This woman deserves this. Your service is needed. We want to support you.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, fabulous. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think it's just been it's just been the journey. It's been the journey for everyone because it's never been done this way. Yeah. And yeah, we've just got to figure each other out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it's so much, I hear that so often, that it's so much relationship building and, like, you know, in the hospital system, like as a nurse as well, I experience this all the time, is that the hierarchy is so strong. Like the hierarchy is, you know, there's no breaking down that hierarchy. But if you leave that system, which you kind of have,
100%.
You are like your hierarchy. It's you. Yeah. You know, you might have other midwife friends or whatever that might have had more experiences or whatever. But it feels like, you know, in private midwifery that you're kind of on like a level playing field. It's not like you're trying to, you know, you're all just doing your thing, trying to be with women, provide XYZ. It's not a matter of like who's better than who and who has any right to do this or that. So like coming out of that system, yeah, I can totally imagine that that would be freeing, but also such a like different way to, you know, again, you also then have to have more trust in yourself as well, because like it's you and you and you.
Yeah.
And you,
I remember walking and being called for my first client's home birth.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, oh, wow, I'm doing this. This is happening.
It's me.
I am calling everything. Like, this is down to me. And I remember stepping into the home and like seeing this woman labor and just smiling and being, my mind is very chaotic.
Yeah.
And I remember stepping into the space and instantly my mind was quiet.
Yep.
And I was like, we're good. Like, everything's okay. Like I've never felt so calm, so aware, so confident in what I knew was normal. So that's my biggest thing is when I speak with students, it's like you need to understand normal so that you can understand when it's abnormal and therefore utilize your toolbox
to
rectify and bring it back to normal or transfer, either. But it's just you out there. It's just you hanging out. So I think there was a big thing when I knew that I wanted to be a private midwife and I was like towing the line about, am I going to do this? Am I not? Yeah. And one of my biggest fears, what was holding me back, was a fear of a shoulder dystocia, because previously the only other time I had seen them was from the complete wrong angle, because the doctor team would come in and they would rectify it. And it wasn't your job as the midwife to rectify that.
Yeah.
But I kept hearing that this was a midwifery skill and this is what midwives were meant to do. And this is like, we did it at uni and like we did it in like clinical and all of these things, but I just never had this opportunity to do it. So I just decided smarter, not harder. And I would just reach out to every consultant that I think would be willing to speak with me.
Yeah.
I asked them, I was like, can you please teach me shoulders? Can you please talk to me through this? And I went and did all these ridiculously expensive yet amazing education workshops and what are they called? Conferences and, you know, hands-on experience with like so many amazing practitioners, and just being like, okay, all I have learnt, everything I could possibly learn now, I just have to do it now.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I had my first shoulder dystocia.
Yeah.
And it was managed. And this baby was perfectly fine. This woman was very rattled, obvious reasons, but she trusted me, and that was the biggest thing. It was the first time that I've been like, wow, yes, that was a midwifery emergency, and it was midwifery managed.
Yeah.
And the difference in the outcomes to what I had seen when it's been obstetrically managed, mind you, very different scenarios, but like, I guess the example is, like, this woman had a shoulder dystocia and she was physiologically laboring, and then even with the head out in between, there's no issues with this baby's heart rate. But as soon as we saw that there was a shoulder dystocia, we acted.
Yeah.
And I needed to remove this baby's posterior arm. But as soon as that baby's legs were out, they started to cry. And they were on mum's chest. Within 15 minutes, they were breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Everything was normal. Like, everything was normal.
Yeah.
And my previous experiences to a shoulder dystocia is that baby is stunned. It needs a resus. Like, it goes to NICU. Like, all of these things.
Yeah.
Mind you, the majority of those babies have probably been induced. So, you know, to say that the cause is what. But it was really like, wow.
Wow.
Because you're led to believe that, like, that hierarchy is that no, you have to be this midwife down here. You have to stay in your space, and you cannot come up those reins until you do all of the things that we say you need to do, which is time. And the reality is that's not true. It's you're capable of whatever you want to go and achieve.
Yeah,
and if you want to go and achieve all those experiences, then it's up to you. And I guess, that's my biggest thing to students is that don't even for a second buy into that. Oh, it's my biggest pet peeve is hearing students, they just, like, you know, new grads, they've just had their first rotation in one ward, and then they're freaking out being like, oh no, I'm going to have to go to birth suite. Like, oh, and I'm like, why are you worried? And they're like, oh, just because, like, what if I, like, I just forgotten everything. I was like, no. You've just spent 3 years of your life dedicating your time to learning exactly what you were meant to do.
Yeah.
Like, trust that you know what you're capable of. Like, your role is to identify, and if you need help, you call for help. You are capable. Like, don't bite into it. No.
Absolutely.
You are capable. It hurts my soul.
Yeah, absolutely. I do have a final question, which might lead to two questions. Did you have a home birth, or was your some
Yeah, no, I did. I had a home birth.
Amazing.
I was able to be supported by the Belmont Birthing Service.
Okay, yeah.
Because at the time I didn't know any of the private midwives in the area.
Yeah.
And my dearest friend, Asha, she works for Belmont, and I didn't care where this woman was. She was going to be my midwife.
Yeah.
And I had him at 41 and 6.
Yeah.
At home, I think it was 13 hours from the first contraction to him coming out.
Yeah.
And it was wild. It was just absolutely wild.
Yeah.
It was. I can't even. It's so interesting because his birth taught me so much of how I practice now.
Yeah.
So the first and foremost thing that has deeply, deeply impacted my practice is this: if you go over 42 weeks, like, does it matter? No.
Exactly. Because
I could not get over, I didn't think it would bother me being a midwife, but I could not get over this pressure that you need to have a baby before 42 weeks, otherwise all of your plans are gone.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it until 41 and, like, 4 days when my midwife came and saw me and I asked for another stretch and sweep.
Yeah.
Because I was so scared. I was so scared of losing what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I hadn't let myself realize that I cared.
Yeah.
I hadn't let myself realize that it actually was important to me, that I did want this. I did want this home birth, because before I was like, I don't mind. Like, if I have to transfer in, it's okay. Like, I don't mind.
Yeah.
And I very quickly realized, I was like, no, I do care. I actually, this is important to me. Oh my goodness. This is, all hangs in the balance. Anyway, my midwife, she was just like, go and have a swim. You need a full reset. Like, you need to get out of this head of yours. You just need to let it go.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I do. Anyway, I don't swim. So I don't go in the ocean. I don't like the ocean. I hate the ocean. It was in the middle of June. And my midwife even asking me to do that, I was like, I hate you. Yeah. I was like, but I knew she was right.
Yeah.
So I went and jumped in the Merriweather Baths and literally felt my soul leave my body.
Wow.
Like, whoa, get me out of this water.
Yeah.
And I think it was, maybe 5 hours later, I had my first contraction.
Wow.
And I truly think that it was because I had this full reset and I just was able to let.
Do you set, like, you should send everybody to those baths now? Like,
well, I do.
Go to the baths. Yeah, this is like somewhat different, but I, Frankie was born last year. Like, so I had Murphy during the very start of COVID, and I had all these grand plans, and then like COVID happened and I'd like cancel everything. So for Frankie, I was like, okay, like I have this on my list. And one of the things was to go and float like in the pods, because I actually quite like that. When, you know, not pregnant, but you know, I have finished work. I was like almost 38 weeks, I think, or maybe I was 38 weeks, but I'd like booked in and it said like online that it was safe during pregnancy, or like they were happy to accept it in pregnancy. I was like, it'll be fine. And I go there and they fucking would not let me into the pod.
Why?
She said, but what if your waters break? And I was like, what if you have, I don't know how to deliver a baby. And I was like, you think that I'm coming here for my 45-minute float, I'm going to go into labor and also have the baby in that period of time, and you're worried about who's going to deliver it? Like, I was outraged. I was outraged, but, like, I still, like, that must feel so nice to be like in warm water, like just
floating on your back, floating. Just feeling divine.
Goddess.
Oh, that would be amazing. Oh,
yeah.
I would have raged.
Yeah, I was.
A piece of paper and I will sign it away. And pizzas get delivered, mate, not babies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. But, you know, that also just reaffirmed to me that whether this, lady or whoever had children or not, she clearly didn't understand physiological birth, because somebody with an understanding of physiological birth would not have that, you know. And it was kind of like, well, you know, okay, so what if my waters break? What if somebody is on their period and like there's blood in the water? Like, what are you going to do then? You're not going to like screen everybody and be like, make sure you don't start your period whilst in the pod. Hey, like, and if there was, and if there was something like that, then like, I presume that there's a process to clean it or whatever. Like waters are, you know,
urine
clear, like, you know, and
70% urine is sterile.
So annoying. Anyway, that just reminded me. But I just remember being like, I really, number one, want to make every woman in Australia aware that home birth exists. But number two, like, also share stories about how physiological labor and birth can be, because it's I mean, it tells a very beautiful story, but it's never as dramatic as, you know, hospital stories. Like
I think that there's such a, it blows my mind when I think about how I was after my home birth, and I had a textbook perfect home birth, in my eyes. I did, anyway. And I still couldn't get over the enormity of that experience. Like, it rattled me to my core. And it was so intense and it was so profound that I needed time to, like, come back and talk about it again and again and again. Yeah. Like, it was so intense. And I'm like, when I think about how overwhelmingly big that process was for me and it all went well.
Yeah.
What on earth can happen to a woman in their experience when it goes well?
Yeah.
In hospital, because we all know if you've ever experienced hospital, like I had a woman contact me once, and this is an example of quotation mark, well, a yeah. well birth, is she said she was so deeply traumatized from how her previous experience was. And when I sat down, I said, oh, tell me what about it was so traumatizing. Tell me, talk to me about it. Tell me your story. And like everything she said, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is what any midwife would be like, oh, this is going well. What yeah. a perfect birth. This is
yeah.
wonderful.
But to her, it was yeah.
And when I read through her notes, it was so like balloon taken out, waters broken.
Yeah.
Spontaneous labor commenced.
Yeah.
Intense contractions,
yeah.
woman acopic, request yeah. analgesia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Birthed, no issues post birth, down to the ward. And I was yeah. like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And like, this is the thing is that, yeah, like, birth is intense. Birth is overwhelming. Birth yeah. is like complete and utter cracking and total demolishing of your entire identity as you yeah. know it, because yeah. you have to make way for this new person.
Absolutely.
Like every single baby, it's the exact same process. And if you're not held in that space, or you're not ready for that, then you got like, oh, I don't know where I'm even going with this. It's one of the biggest things is that birth at home, I think, allows you to feel safe if that is your safe space. So yeah. my biggest philosophy is birth where you feel safest, because yeah. not everyone perceives safety in the same way.
Yeah.
So some of my clients are like, absolutely no way am I having this baby yeah. at home. And I'm like, cool, no worries, not an issue. Like yeah. where do you feel safe? Because that's where you're going to have your physiological change, where you're going to have the cascade of hormones, because yeah. you feel safe. We all know yeah. that it stems from that. And yeah. for me personally, it was at home. But it doesn't take away from how intense the process is. I think that
yeah.
you know, we can get so caught up in this idea of like, I've got to have this perfect induction or this perfect Caesar or this perfect yeah. home birth. But the reality is that if we're not prepared and held and we haven't unpacked all we need to unpack ready for this birth, then that is where we're going to have a really, really interesting postpartum. It doesn't mean yeah. it's bad. It just means that it's going to be different to yeah. what we expected.
Yeah.
And I think that's inevitable anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, like I definitely, like a home birth is not going to solve all your problems.
No.
Like at the end of the day, like, postpartum comes with its own unique challenges. Being a parent also unique challenges. And I constantly reflect back onto, you know, all of the women past and all of the women in the future that have to approach those challenges with the addition of, you know, a birth experience that they weren't expecting, that took them off guard, that made them, you know, how many women actually know what the environment of hospital to birth in is like? Like, you know, you have an idea of, yes, if I go to the emergency department, I hope to hell I am safe, you know, but I've not spent a lot of time in an emergency department. So, you know, I don't know. But like similar with like the maternity ward, like, you hope that you know, there's doctors and midwives and, you know, all of the people there. And, like, yeah, I think a lot of women are caught off guard with how the system actually is. But I do totally agree that, yeah, birth where you feel safe. Home birth is not for everyone.
No
one is saying that all women should birth at home. Absolutely no one is saying that. I've never heard that. Well, I'll never speak that. But everyone should know that they can if they want to. Yeah. Yes.
And this is where it's like your podcast is fantastic because you're opening up every single facet that is a possibility. Like I met a woman not long ago and she was like, I don't want any scans. I don't want any ultrasounds. I don't even want any antenatal appointments. I just want you here for the birth. And I was like, cool.
Yeah.
So you want a free birth?
Yeah.
Like you want a wild, I feel like I'm not the right person for you. Like it was really beautiful to be like, I respect completely what it is that you need and I want you to achieve that.
Yeah.
My deepest joy is meeting and learning and like getting to know my clients. So the idea of not knowing you and then stepping into your birth makes me deeply uncomfortable because I want to know exactly who you are. So I know when you're okay. And I know that when you're transitioning versus when you say that there is something wrong and you need me to do something.
Yeah.
My biggest thing is that my role as the midwife is to educate and inform you.
Yeah.
And it is your role and your job to choose your options from those things.
Yeah.
So it is not my job to choose for you. I refuse to choose for you. You have to own your role as the mother of this child to decide what is right for you. And I can guarantee you every single woman is like, oh, why? No, I trust you. You make the right decision. I know I don't mind. And I always have to turn around and go, I'm really sorry, but I can't make this choice for you.
Yeah.
And it starts then, like our first ever appointment of being like, okay, these are your options. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
And eventually it turns
absolutely
into this confidence of like, no, I know what I need. I know I trust my body. I trust I know what I need.
Yeah.
It's amazing to watch. Like I can't. Oh, it's my favorite thing to watch them go from this fear, I don't want to make the wrong choice, to actually fostering self-trust to then go, hey, I need you to do this for me because this is what I need. And I'm like, whatever you want. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. You helping like women understand the power that they have.
Fostering self-trust. I don't think it can be said any better. That's what Rachel Reed says. She's like, it is our job to foster self-trust because like, there's the most, I always believed that like, you know, when I was a very junior midwife and especially when I was in the home birth community that, there must have been something that happened that was wrong or someone messed up or there's got to be something that, you know, births can't always end in like if a birth ends in a cesarean or in a forceps, there's something that's gone wrong. And one of my dearest, most loyal, incredible friends who is also a midwife.
Yeah.
And she ended up having an emergency Caesar.
Yeah.
And she wrote about it afterwards. And what she wrote and her experience and like learning about it from there completely changed my entire perspective.
Yeah. Wow. Like,
it changed everything. For me. But essentially she turned around and she was kind of like, how can I do this justice? Essentially that some women, we have the births we need to have in order to learn what we need to learn to mother that child. And at the time we don't know that because it might be completely against what we planned or what we wanted. And we're like, why? Why would this happen? Like, why? And there's always gifts in every single labor. And it's whether or not we have the tools and the support to be able to unpack each labor and learn exactly what we do need to learn. And I learned so much from my labor. Like, I truly learned that I was not ready to let go of my maiden self, like the the carefree, travel around the world, like do whatever the heck I wanted. Even though I deeply wanted to be a mother, it came up so fiercely in my labor. Wow. And I literally felt like I had these two entities, like two me's,
yeah,
and this little maiden me just throwing an absolute tantrum,
yeah,
being like, no, I'm not ready to go. I don't want to do this. This is ridiculous. No, yeah, I am not ready. I don't want to go. Like, just like absolute despair and like anger, so much anger.
Yeah.
Just deep, deep sadness. And then this mother perspective was just like, it's okay. I'll wait. Take your time. I'm here. It's all good. Just take your time.
Yeah.
When you're ready, I'm here.
Yeah.
And there, oh, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It was as soon as I was fully dilated, it was like everything shifted. And it was like the maiden was finally ready to say, okay, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And then like the mother part of me stepped in.
Yeah.
And everything changed. Like everything changed. The sensation, the perspective, the sounds.
Yeah, wow.
The environment, it was, yeah, quiet and it was purposeful and dark.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Like it was absolutely amazing. But I learned that I had to let go.
Yeah.
I thought it was surrender for a long time. I thought I needed to surrender, but it wasn't. I needed to let go of my maiden. Like I needed to let go, yeah, of that facet of myself.
Yeah.
And say goodbye, essentially. And yeah, it took me a long time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
I think it took me about 6 weeks after his, yeah, birth to really be okay with saying goodbye. And yeah, that's what I mean. Like you can have this perfect textbook home birth, but really our births are our teachers, and that is what I am so passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our births are our teachers. I really, really love that.
Yeah, they are. And that is all the work of Jane Hardwick Collings. Like,
yeah,
if anyone is interested, if that calls to them, go and look at Jane Hardwick Collings. Like, yeah, her work is ridiculous because you do every, she believes in the red thread. So when you look, yeah, at these reoccurring themes that keep presenting,
yeah,
it's because we haven't learned something and it always comes up.
Yeah, I actually have seen, I think, like a picture of like some, like a literal red thread. And then somebody, yep, was like, oh, that's my red thread. Like, what if, yep, what if I got to learn?
Oh,
I've seen that somewhere, maybe on her Instagram or something.
Oh, her work's incredible.
There's so, yeah, many amazing people in the birth,
oh, isn't
world.
It?
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah.
Thank you so much. What an amazing conversation. I feel like we've like talked about so everything, many different things. I'm so, so grateful.
You're so welcome.
Is there anything, any last things that you wanted to say or?
I guess like, like you said that, you know, home birth is something that needs to be aware, like for people as an option. I think private, yeah, midwifery is so, such a beautiful, deeply loving, nurturing option for women and families. And I think that it's, the more we know about it, the more normal it will become.
Yeah.
Because in New Zealand, that is the normal. It's, yeah, not very common for you to go to hospital and have a baby and just,
yep,
meet a random midwife. It's actually the, yep, norm to have a private midwife. And my, yep, goal is to make it as accessible and as available to every single family and to try and spread the word. Be like, this is an option for you. Like anywhere that you want a birth, if it's at home, if it's in hospital, if it's an elective Caesar, if it's, yep, a home birth, whatever it is, contact your private, yeah, midwife in the area and go, yeah, and meet all of them. There's so many popping up now and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And like Melanie Jackson always talks about, you know, there's enough people in the world that everyone's going to keep having sex. Everyone's going to keep having, yeah, babies. We're never going to be short of work.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
All we need to do is let people know that it's an option,
yeah,
and therefore midwives will have enough work.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that I guess the last thing I guess want to, contact and look up private midwives in your area, because meet all of them and find the one that's right for you. Find the one that you feel safe with, and that's all you need. Doesn't matter if you don't want to have home birth, there's going to be a perfect midwife for you if that's what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so, so much, Anika. I really appreciate all of that you've talked about.